You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Today on the podcast, Christina Long is in studio, and we talk about what she learned during the Razorback football preseason. We'll take a position-by-position look at this team, the offense, the defense, the special teams, you name it. We'll have that today on the show, but first, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
4 days away from the start of Razorback football, it's going to be a 3:15 kickoff Saturday over at Razorback Stadium against Alabama A&M. Christina Long from Hogs Illustrated here in studio today. We're going to take some time looking through the roster and some of the big takeaways. We talked yesterday very briefly about the depth chart, but I want to go position by position on the roster and just kind of maybe put a bow on what happened during the preseason. You were over there a lot at practice. I guess probably pretty much every open practice you were there. And we'll start with quarterback. I mean, that's the position everybody wants to talk about. Taylen Green obviously is the starter. There is the narrative this summer, which has been so overplayed in my mind. But stop me if you've heard this. If you didn't know, it's year two of Arkansas quarterback Taylen Green and Bobby Petrino together. But maybe going a little bit, you know, beneath the surface of it being year two of the two of them in his second year here with the Razorbacks, what have you seen from him? And do you see an improved quarterback? Because I'll be honest, I'm a Taylen Green skeptic based on what we saw last year. Yes, he put up a lot of yards. You know, the offense was like 10th in total offense, but I'm a big efficiency person. And I didn't see an efficient offense last year against the best teams. I mean, you think about Oklahoma State, where they have 648 yards, yeah, and they only had 31 points to show for it. There were too many instances like that where if you're just looking at the yardage, hey, they had a great, you know, great day, but it's about putting points on the scoreboard, and they didn't do that enough. And I also think that he put the ball in harm's way too often last year. He had, I think, 14 turnovers in terms of interceptions and fumbles. I think there were like seven other fumbles that he recovered or somebody recovered, a lot of interceptable passes where it ended up being an incompletion, but it could have been intercepted. And so sell me on Taylen Green being a better version than the 2024 Taylen Green.
Yeah, I mean, you're right about the narrative being the year two and how so many Bobby Petrino quarterbacks have just made leaps and bounds worth of strides in year two with him. And I do think you are going to see better quarterback play from him in large part because I think they have upgraded around him. I really do think that they have better pieces around him. Do I think that it's going to be enough to win them significantly more games than last season? I'm not really sure yet. That's kind of where I've landed. I think, especially offensively, it is going to be a better football product. I'm not sure if it is going to win them more games. But I think that the large part with Green is what's around him. I think a lot of it is the offensive line. I do believe this offensive line is going to be better. But I also think, you know, you can't blame all of Taylen's issues last year on the protection issues, mm-hmm, because there were also times where he ran himself into a really long sack when, mm-hmm, he didn't really need to. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, there's been a lot of talk. You know, we ask a lot of coaches and teammates and things like that to the best that we can. Hey, is he, you know, do you see him making better decisions? Do you see him not running into those issues? But at a certain point, you can do it all day in practice, but what he actually does in a game, the decisions he makes when he's actually in a game, mm-hmm, is going to be different. But, you know, whatever you want, you know, you can take this with as much salt as you want. They seem to really believe that he is more comfortable, more confident, more sure of himself, making better decisions, taking care of the ball better, which is hugely important. That is the number one thing that he needs to do better is take care of the ball and make better decisions.
And it was a problem with him at Boise State, too.
It was.
Which is why he got benched.
It was.
I don't know if he really ever got benched at Boise State, but he had to split time right. with the backup quarterback there, Maddox Madsen. Right.
And that led to his transfer.
I think, what, he had 12 interceptions his last year?
I don't remember the exact 12 number.
12 and 13 games yeah. or 12 and 12 games. And so,
And then I think 9 last season, right?
I always, with a quarterback like that, it's like, is there such thing as being turnover prone?
Yeah.
You know, do you try to do too much? And are you able to coach that out of a player? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm really interested to see with him this year.
Right. And I think it's got to be a balance of both. I think, you know, if he is – I think he has been turnover prone. And so how do you coach that out? What can you do to, you know, whether it's in practice, whether it's, you know, fixing some mental mistakes. I don't know if you do it in film. I don't know if you do it with, ball security drills. I don't know what you do. But they have to figure out some way to fix it. But I do think you're going to see better play because I think they've done more around him to minimize the errors that took place last year that made him look bad. And then there were also times where he made himself look bad.
Okay, so you say they've done more around him. And I understand the offensive line part. You look down the line at offensive line mate, Corey Robinson from Georgia Tech. A lot of people liked him. Fernando Carmona, we saw him play last year. Kittler, the center. They're high on Kobe Branham if he ends up being their right guard, which I think there's probably a pretty good chance he will be the starter.
Seems like it.
But does he play every snap there? I don't know. Marion Harris, Shaq McCroy at tackle. That seems like that may be the weakest link on the offensive line right now. But I want to go back to being better around him. Because as I look at the receivers, I don't know that I see as good of a receiver core this year. And I'll throw tight end in there too because they've lost Luke Kaz. As I saw last year, you've got Satania who transferred out. And Tesla who's doing really well in the NFL preseason. And obviously Andrew Armstrong was his safety valve a year ago. Are they better because of the offensive line? Is there something about these receivers that I'm missing? Because I just don't know that I see at receiver what I saw last year.
Yeah, well, because it's different than last year. It is not the same. I don't think there's an Andrew Armstrong in this group. Mm. I think rather than having one person who, honestly, sometimes to Talen's detriment, he would kind of lock in on and miss other open people.
Remember our Valentine's Day cards for Talen Green?
Oh my
and
God!
Andrew
yes,
Armstrong?
I only have eyes for you.
Yeah, there you
I
go.
Do remember that. So I don't think you have that, which I don't think has to be a bad thing. I'm interested how it's going to work because what they have done, and this is kind of what they said they were going to do. Financially, anyway, this is the approach to the whole roster, not just the receiver core, which was rather than spend big on, you know, a big star or a super high level talent, they were going to try to spend kind of more across the board, get more quantity maybe over quality. I do think Isaac Tesla was good. He is doing really well in the NFL preseason. They didn't use him in the way that we are seeing him be used now in his NFL career. Like that's the Isaac Tesla you see the Lions tweet out every weekend or whatever is not like the, and I'm not saying it's because he wasn't playing as well at Arkansas. It's just, I don't know. That's like one of the great mysteries to me is like how he was used because like, I don't think any of us really knew, you know, we knew he was good, but I don't think any of us really would have guessed that he was going to do what we're seeing him do now at the next level, given how it feels like how comparatively little we saw him last year. And I mean, he was like their second leading receiver, I think. So it's not like he wasn't on the field, but I think you're going to have more Isaac Tislas, more Jordan Anthony's, more Isaiah Satania's than Andrew Armstrong's. And I think that might be okay, but we're going to see. I don't see Satania as like a major loss. And I think they've replaced him. I think some of the guys they've gotten are comparable to him. I don't think there's anybody that's like, I just don't see that as a major talent deficiency that they.
He had some good games last year. Yeah. He had some games where he disappeared. Would it be safe to say that C.J. Brown has kind of taken the Satania role in this offense?
I kind of think so, yeah. And that was one of the things we talked about yesterday that was like a little bit of a surprise was C.J. Brown being in that slot spot and then Jaylen Brown being in the other outside spot. And honestly, I don't know a lot about Jaylen Brown. Basically, what I know about him is he's really fast. So I'm very interested to see what he can do and what he brings because what happened was so he and Andy Jean, the Florida / spent the spring with Pitt transfer, they came in post spring and they were the two receivers they got post spring. And so then every time we talked about them, both us and when we would ask about coaches and how they would talk about them, they would kind of lump them together. Mm. Be like, these two guys are good. But I feel like we didn't really get to know either of them that well as far as their skills and what they bring. So I was a little bit surprised to see Jaylen Brown at that number one spot. Not because I don't think he deserves it, but just because I'm interested to see what he could do. Basically what I know is they think he's fast. And he looked pretty good in practice. I don't know. So I think the receivers, they have more options, I think, than they did last year. Now, one thing that's important to know was last year, in practice, Tyrone Broden looked amazing. He was making incredible plays. We were like, that is the guy. And then he disappeared. And so you might see some of these guys that we think look really good in practice, or some of these guys that we think even just look like they're going to contribute. Like I said, I don't see an Andrew Armstrong in here. I see guys that are good athletes. I see guys that are going to be, you know, somebody's got to lead them in receiving. And I see guys that I think are consistent and reliable. But are we going to have a Tyrone Broden situation? I don't know. We might.
You mentioned the player who had been at, what was it, Florida and then
Andy Jean.
Yeah, so this is kind of like a small writing. Like, we'll geek out over this and somebody else may not even care. But, you know, like whenever you write somebody's name or if you're writing a story about somebody, a lot of times you'll put in parentheses 6'1" and 190 pounds. Like, I think we need to get to the point where we just put Florida slash Pitt slash Florida State.
That's what I've started doing. That's what I've started, especially because they have Julian Neal, one of the DBs. He came from Fresno State. But he went to Stanford in the spring, except he never actually went to Stanford. He just was, like, supposed to, but then the staff got fired, like, and he never actually, like, went there.
You need,
crazy.
Like, lots of footnotes in your story now.
Yes.
You know, Gene credit.
Yeah, exactly. So I started putting in parentheses, like, Florida slash Pitt, Fresno State slash Stanford, because it's like, you can't really, I don't want to call him a Stanford transfer when he was, like, never really even there. But he technically was, so it's like, what do you call him? So I
just put
both.
Most schools you've seen? Somebody like when they get to Arkansas, the most schools that you've seen them be at previously.
I think there's been some four.
Like some people like this
is their
fourth.
I mean, yeah. Raylan Sharp, this is his fourth.
Wow.
I think he was, Houston, Missouri State, Fresno State here. Like, and there's other. I don't think it's just him, but he's the one that comes to mind right away because I've written about him before. But yeah, there's several.
That's amazing. And then, you know, you get the players who, and I don't know if he's one of them, but the players who, like, I was reading about somebody recently who had, like, committed and he had committed and he's going into his senior year of high school. Like, he had committed to, it was his fifth time that he had committed to a team and his second time that he had committed to the team that he is currently committed to. And he's only like, imagine once this guy finds the transfer portal, how much fun he'll have. And so, like, you know, by the time his college career ends, he may have been affiliated with, I don't know, 11 teams.
That's crazy.
I don't know. It's it was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Mike Washington. Seems like there's a lot of excitement about him. Quentin Jackson was really good last year. Struggled with some ankle injuries. I don't know that we ever saw the – I think we saw it at the start of the season. I'd say maybe over the last 2 months we didn't see the best version of him. Like, is Washington, do you think he's the type that can make people forget about Jaquindon Jackson?
I kind of do. I think from what we've seen of him in practice and what we've heard coaches say about him too, I think he just brings kind of an explosiveness. I think he's just kind of your every down back. He's really physical, but he's also really fast. And I think he's a good combination of the other two running backs that they have in Rodney Hill and Braylon Russell. Braylon Russell, who we've talked about, you know, he's gotten more in shape. He's dropped some weight, whatever. But they, you know, they expect him to still be kind of more of their bruising running back. And, you know, he has some speed. It's not like he's just, you know, the bowling ball type of running back. And then Rodney Hill is your shiftier, speedier, smaller guy. And I think Mike Washington offers you the best of both worlds. And that's why I think he's kind of the leading person right now. So I'm really excited about him. I have bought into the Mike Washington hype for sure. What I have learned about myself is I love a running back. I love a good running back. I get more excited to watch a good running back than I think like any other position. I don't know why. I don't know if it's because grew up watching good Arkansas running backs or what, but I get really excited when I hear that there's a good running back coming. So, you know, I was really excited about Jaquindon last year. We wrote about him early on in Hogs Illustrated and put him on a cover. And then I had Mike Washington on the cover of our week one Hogs Illustrated issue. So I'm partial to running backs, I think.
Let me ask you about AJ Green. Because he's back. I don't know. Like, how does he fit into the equation? Because whenever he was here previously, albeit it was a different offense, it was Kendall Briles' offense and not the one that they're running now. I thought the last year here, I mean, what, he run for like 400 yards, had three or four touchdowns that year. So, I mean, he wasn't a great running back, but he was certainly part of a, you know, larger rotation. How does he fit into all of this year?
Yeah, they put him on the depth chart at four, I think. They, you know, gave him that kind of nod. It's hard to say right now. I mean, he got some work with the second team. He might have gone with the first team a little bit. When to explain how we watch practice, there's a period called fastball start that is the closest thing in fall camp that media gets to watch to real football. It's when we actually get to see them like run some plays and do some things that actually look like the sport that you're going to see on Saturday. But sometimes they'll hold guys out. You know, Braylon Russell didn't do a lot of fastball, but it wasn't because he was, you know, people would freak out and go, is he hurt? Because we'll list who was with which team. Mm-hmm. Would freak out, is he hurt? And it's like, no, they just sometimes they'll pull different guys out to put, you know, try different things. So AJ Green,
different combinations
yes,
of
exactly.
players.
So AJ Green got in with a couple of different different string offenses throughout camp. But I don't know. I mean, I'm interested in that too, because I think it's just a fascinating story when you see a guy come back to a school. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I think he's kind of there mostly for depth. I think you'll see him a few times. I think they like him as, you know, like a special teams guy too, but I'm not really sure. I'm curious how much they're going to actually use him. I think the fact that they've got three guys they feel really good about in Washington, Russell, and Hill means you just probably won't see him that much. I'm not sure situationally what situations they want him in, but I think you'll see him.
I think he turns 23 this year, Green. And so there's I feel like there's a maturity there.
Definitely.
That maybe they can take advantage of. Going back to quarterback, with Green, I worry about running quarterbacks and their durability throughout the season. We saw it with him last year, albeit the reason he got hurt last year was what I think was a dirty hit in the Tennessee game. And it wasn't a matter of him, you know, scrambling and twisting an ankle or something. But there is always that concern, I think, with a running quarterback. And I was thinking through this morning, the quarterbacks, say, like in the last 25 years. I mean, Matt Jones, he had at least one season, maybe two, where he was dealing with something. KJ Jefferson seemed like he was dealing with something quite frequently the last couple of years that he was here. And then, you know, like we said with Taylen Green last year, what did they say, like the last 7-8 games, they didn't feel like he was anywhere near 100%. We saw where in the Tennessee game last year, Singleton had to come in, and he was able to lead them down the field to a win. Now, there's lots of caveats there. Number one, I think Braylon Russell was the key to that drive. And then number two, Tennessee let Arkansas score so that they would have a chance to go down and win at the end. With KJ Jackson, what kind of confidence do you have that if they end up in a game where Taylen can't finish it, that KJ Jackson could come in and lead them the way that Singleton was able to last year?
Yeah, I feel okay about it. You know, that was something somebody asked Coach Pittman, and I think Bobby Petrino as well. Now, of course, when you ask them that with a microphone in their face, they're not going to say, I don't know, we're a little worried about that. Yeah. You know, what else are they going to say besides we feel great about it? But, I mean, they did feel that way. And they seem to have been pretty confident in KJ Jackson this whole time. There was never kind of a backup quarterback battle. It was always him, even when they brought in an additional transfer after the Madden Iamaliava saga. And so there was never any kind of doubt that it was going to be him. I think this weekend will be big for that, because one thing that, you know, when Malachi led that drive, one thing that came up a lot was, you know, he was more comfortable doing that because the experience he was able to get, you know, early in the season against some of these easier teams. Mm-hmm. You know, he had seen it before, he had done it before. They try to do a lot in practice of getting the backup quarterbacks the chance to work with the ones sometimes in practice. And they've continued to do that. And so I think this weekend that's one of the goals is, hey, let's get, you know, and that's the goal anytime you play an FCS team, right? Is you want to get out to your big lead and you want to get some guys some reps. But I think it'll be important for KJ Jackson, especially just because, like Singleton last year, it'll be his first playing time, really, his first meaningful playing time. I think he came in the fourth quarter of UAPB last year. KJ Jackson did.
He led the last touchdown drive.
Yeah. So you know, he's been in a game. He'll be in a similar kind of game this weekend, assuming they do what we think they're going to do. But, you know, I feel okay about it. I think I need to see, you know, I need to see it in a game again a little bit more, but it seems like he's a really smart player. And I think he has a little bit different, I think he's a different look than Green for sure. He's obviously smaller. Not a lot of people are as tall as Taylen Green. So I think it's different. But I don't think they would have to completely change their offense necessarily.
He's left-handed too.
Yeah.
That's always, I've heard from receivers who say it's weird catching from left-handed quarterbacks when you're used to it, right? Because the spin on the ball is different.
Yeah.
And it just takes a little bit of adjustment there. So I want to tell you the 100-year check's coming to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. That's going to be next Thursday, September 4th at noon at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can reserve your seat now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com. For Hunter Juracek next Thursday at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. We'll have a Q&A with him there, and it'll be fun to ask him a lot of the questions that I think have accumulated over the last several months, whether it be about football, about facilities, about the house settlement. I mean, there's a number of things, the collective.
Yeah.
There's a number of things that we're planning on talking with him about. Christina wrote a good story this morning on our website. I want you to talk about it here for a second. The headline says, Arkansas Athletics summer layoffs, part of national trend as schools cut costs for revenue sharing. Hunter didn't want to speak for this story, but you talked to a lot of industry people and just kind of put Arkansas's layoffs that they had this summer inside the department in maybe a bigger context as to what's happening nationally.
Yeah, I mean, basically, when Arkansas had its layoffs in June, I knew other schools had done that. It was something that I kind of felt would be coming, and not just because, and that's not to say anything about Arkansas' situation specifically. I just figure a lot of schools are going to be doing this. It kind of makes sense that Arkansas would be, just because I think we're going to keep seeing more and more. And other SEC schools have done it. I mean, Texas A&M did it. They were the first ones, really, to do it last year, to come out and say, hey, we're doing this because we're trying to prepare for the money we're going to have to spend on revenue sharing. Part of that was they had a new AD, and he was coming in and going, all right, I need to, you know, make some adjustments. So it was a slightly different situation, but all kinds of schools, you know, schools like Michigan and Texas A&M are two very rich schools. Those are not schools that are strapped for cash. And those are still, you know, these are still conversations that they're having and actions that they're taking. So basically what I looked at was I looked at who actually got laid off by Arkansas, and what departments they came from and what levels they came from. And so it was a pretty good mix of, you know, higher level administrators, so associate ADs, assistant ADs, things like that. And then there were some kind of some entry level ish or kind of mid level positions. And they were kind of from all kinds of different departments. There was, you know, somebody that was basically an accountant, I think. There were some academic advisors, things like that, more associate level type of things. Compliance had three layoffs, which was interesting. And I think basically what I looked at was, okay, are there trends in what other schools, the other departments that schools are cutting from? And the answer is yes. The sample size is still pretty small, though. So it's you can't really look at it and go, compliance departments across the country are being slashed. And that was, you know, I didn't know going into reporting the story. I didn't know what I would find. And basically I found different schools are doing it different ways. But it kind of seems like the in general, the departments that are shrinking some are kind of student athlete support, academic support, those kinds of things, things like compliance. And it's just kind of, okay, how can we kind of basically shrink the departments, give fewer people more work, if that makes sense. And so some other stuff that I learned in talking to some industry people was about kind of different new technologies, new software that's emerging in different spaces to kind of make these systems more efficient where you don't have to hire as many people. That's happening as front office staffs build up. You know, the hot thing right now is everybody wants a GM and they want a GM staff. There are a lot of really interesting technologies that exist that are basically making it, you know, making your scouting department smaller and more efficient. So those departments are going to, you know, they're going to have some people, but they're not going to be, you're not necessarily going to have a massive operation because there are some things in place you can do to shrink that a little bit. And so there's a lot of different places. You know, I talked to some people about what other areas do you think might get outsourced or, you know, either outsourced to third parties or put on. Somebody mentioned, you know, you might see schools have more GAs. You might have more student assistant roles, especially in social media and marketing, because they have success with that. Because you get a student in who's really hungry to prove themselves and really wants to launch their career. And you're trying to market to, you know, people their age and maybe and a little older. They can do a really, really good job for you. And so there's things like that that, you know, you're going to kind of see trends that you see in so many other areas of the business world when people are trying to save money.
Interesting. You can read that at our website. It's a really good read right now at wholehogsports.com. When we come back, we're going to shift gears and talk about Razorback defense and special teams. But first, another word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kindle King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kindle King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. I want to tell you, too, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at WholeHogSports.com. Analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at WholeHogSports.com. And on your screen right now, you'll see a QR code that'll take you to our Whole Hog Sports daily newsletter. Hope that you'll subscribe to that. It's a free service that we send out every day to help keep you updated on what's going on here in Fayetteville. Christina Long still with me. We'll talk Razorback defense now. This, to me, if the offense is as improved as people think it is, and if they can score at a higher efficiency than they did last year, then all of a sudden the eyes turn to the defense, and can you stop people enough to outscore them? And I think, to me, I'm sold a little bit on just listening to, you know, various coaches and what you all have told me about practice on the offense. I'm real skeptical about the defense and whether or not they can be as good as they've been the last 2 years. And honestly, again, you go back to, I think sometimes the numbers that we use, whether it be total defense or, you know, some of these other metrics, they can get skewed a little bit. You look at Arkansas last year in the efficiency rankings, and they just weren't real good against power five team or power four teams at keeping them from scoring points.
Yeah. The defense is a concern to me too.
And I don't know that this year is going to be as good as, you know, right, as talented
that's,
as last year.
I don't think that it is. And that's where I'm a little concerned. I think, you know, the highlight is linebacker. I mean, they get back what they had last year. They lost Brad Spence. He transferred to Texas. They bring in Bradley Shaw. Well, they don't bring him in. He's a sophomore. He's back. But they put him in for where basically filling the role Brad Spence had. They have really similar builds. They seem like kind of similar players. I like Bradley Shaw. They feel really confident in him as that third guy. But I think, you know, Dixon Sorey are pretty legit. So I am excited to see them, but your defense can't just be carried by its middle. And I'm worried about the front, and I am somewhat worried about the back end, mostly because so many of these guys are new. And last year, you know, they didn't have a lot of success in pass defense. Now, obviously that's not entirely on the secondary, but there were some problems there. And I think, you know, it's a different looking secondary. They're a lot bigger. I did a little research before this. The five defensive back starters that they have listed on the week one depth chart are an inch taller and 19 pounds heavier on average than last year's for week one depth chart starters. So they are a lot bigger. They insist they have not sacrificed speed in any significant way. I don't know. We'll see. But I am worried about defensive tackle. I think everybody is. That's been like the talking point of the last couple of weeks. But I think that's warranted. I think depth is a concern. I think defensive end is just kind of unproven. I think they might be good. They might be really good. I don't know. I'm curious what Quincy Rhodes can do. There's not a Landon Jackson here. And that's something that you and I think talked about last spring, maybe, was, you know, We talked about how there's not an Andrew Armstrong, there's not a Landon Jackson. It doesn't feel like there's these guys that you look at as like, okay, these are your NFL guys. I think Sorey is like that. And that doesn't mean that there's not NFL guys on this team. It's just, I think some of it is a product of there being so many new players. So we don't know yet on a lot of them who's going to be those guys. But I think, you know, Phillip Lee and Justice Boone are opposite Quincy Rhodes. They're on that other side. I'm intrigued by both of them. Phillip Lee has had a lot of success as a pass rusher. Justice Boone was a guy that, you know, he lost a season to injury at Florida, but they feel really good about him. They didn't hit the quarterback as much as they wanted to last year, and they're really trying to be more aggressive in that this year. But how much success they're going to have, I don't know. We'll see.
So you talked about defensive backs, and they're saying it's not like the defensive backs last year just set the world on fire.
No, they didn't.
So, I mean, maybe it is worth changing it up and see if that works.
Yeah, they've taken a different approach. I think that allows you to do some different things. I think they're a lot longer, which helps. So it's annoying. It's like they kept telling us how much longer they are. And I do think when you look at them, you can kind of tell. But I don't get, like, wingspan data. That's not on the roster, so I can't actually do the number crunching like I did with heights and weights. But, no, I mean, I think you will have a different look. I think there will be kind of some experimenting going on the first few weeks to see their best combination back there. Mm-hmm. I think they've got some versatility, too. That was another thing they really wanted, and Coach Pittman talked about that a lot. He talked about with the portal recruiting, they wanted to get a lot of value in that they wanted to get guys they could use in different ways, and I think they really emphasized that with their secondary. But it just has to be better pass defense-wise than it was last year. And, the bar is kind of low, so it should be – they should be able to make it better. But I'm worried about the front, too.
I want to go back real quick to the efficiency stuff I talked about last year. This is based on games, regular season games against Power 4 teams. There were only two defenses in the SEC that were worse than Arkansas. Mississippi State, who was, like, historically bad defensively last year, and then Vanderbilt was the only one that was worse than Arkansas. In their 9 Power 4 games last year, Arkansas gave up 35% of all points that were available to the opposing offense. And to give you an idea of, like, the best defenses last year, Ole Miss gave up about 20% of all available points. Tennessee gave up 20% of all available points. Texas A&M gave up 17% of all available points. And so, statistically, you look at it, A&M was the best last year, and Arkansas gave up twice as many points as Texas A&M did, or at least points available.
Yeah, it's hard to win that way. Somebody, I think, on our message board was saying this when we were, there was a thread about some of the defensive concerns, and it was like, I believe...
Texas, I'm sorry, not Texas A&M.
Yeah. It was like, I believe that the offense is better, like you were saying earlier, but I don't think, the SEC, it's not exactly a league where you can just hope that you can score a whole ton and just compensate for your defense. It's just not really how it works. And last year, they had the opposite problem. They could have, the defense was able to keep them in games, and then they kind of had to wait on the offense to do something. Sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. But I think it's harder sometimes to win, especially against the schedule that they have, the other way. I worry about that for them. That's part of why I don't think they're going to – I think they might overall have – they might be better to watch, particularly offensively, but I'm not sure if they're going to win more games.
We need to have, like, a sound effect whenever we talk about, like, these buzz terms, these narratives. Because, we talked earlier about year two of Talen. Yeah. You just mentioned the schedule. That's the other one.
Yeah.
Like, those are the two things that I've heard all summer long. It is a tough schedule. Like, well, we think it's a tough schedule.
That's true. You're right.
You just never know. Yeah. You just never know. I mean, like, how many people last year...
That's basically based on last season. It's basically, based on performances of last season.
How many people last season had Florida State on their schedule in the preseason? And they said, this is our toughest game of the year. This sets our schedule. I mean, this puts it over the top.
You're right.
And then they go out and they lay an egg.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because they weren't talented. I think they were pretty darn talented. I just think they didn't like playing for each other or with each other, or there was something going on in the backdrop. And that's the thing you'd never know.
Yeah.
And like you said, a lot of this is based on what we saw last year. We don't know how good these teams are going to be.
Yeah.
We think we do. And there's some historical perspective, too, that you can – like Notre Dame under Marcus Freeman, we know they're going to be a pretty good football team. Texas under Steve Sarkisian, we know they're probably going to be pretty good. LSU under Brian Kelly. But are they going to be as good as they were last year? Are they going to be better than they were last year? We just don't know.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of my annual gripe with all these schedule rankings in the preseason. It's like I would love to go back and look at, like, how closely do the preseason schedule rankings, the strength of schedule, how closely does that align with what actually happened when the year's over?
Yeah. I've caught myself assuming too much from Ole Miss. That's a totally different team this year than it was last year.
Hmm.
If you pick your favorite Ole Miss player from last year, they are probably not there anymore.
Who was your favorite Ole Miss player last year?
I don't know. I'm not like an Ole Miss.
I was wondering if you had one.
I don't know. I feel like favorite and Ole Miss for me are not really aligned terms. But I think
they're kind of like your football Vitello, right?
Yeah. I think So that, you know, that's a totally different team. And I think getting them early actually helps Arkansas a little bit, just because of how much change there is there. But yeah, I think I've caught myself doing the thing where I'm leaning too much on knowledge from last season and not enough on, okay, what's actually here this year? What do we actually think? And I do think there are several teams on the schedule where, you know, if it breaks bad for them, you know, I don't believe in Auburn. I just don't. I think there's kind of like some not Auburn hype. I don't think anyone thinks they're like going to contend for the SEC. But like, I think people think Auburn's going to be better than they are. I'm not sure what to feel about Texas A&M. So there's just some teams on the schedule where I'm like, okay, if they're down the way it seems like they might be down, okay, that helps a little bit. But I do think, you know, I think the non-conference is just really tough. Like, I'm fairly high on Memphis, and then obviously Notre Dame is Notre Dame. So we'll see.
You know, Memphis, they've lost a lot of players from last year,
too.
They
have. It's true.
They're not the same team. And you just, again, you never know. You never know. I don't want to go game by game through the schedule. There's enough shows you
can
listen to.
That's a different podcast we can do.
There are plenty of
other
shows.
We run out of ideas later this week. That's what we do.
Yeah. I want to go back to linebacker because, yeah, like you said, Sorey and Dix, like those seem like those are two legitimate SEC linebackers. I think that when you look at them, you know, say like if you look across the board, you look at their defensive line and then you think about, okay, what do they have here and here? They probably don't stack up really well with a lot of the other SEC teams. And probably you would say the same thing about the secondary. I don't think they've got the best linebacking group in the SEC. You're probably going to find, you know, better linebackers.
There's just so many good ones.
At Georgia and Alabama and some of these, you know, perennial defensive favorites. But I think that they probably line up or they line up closer at linebacker than they do, and probably much closer at linebacker than they do the other two positions.
Yeah, that's definitely the case, I think. And I think, to your point, I think the SEC has had such good, you know, they've had some really, really good linebackers recently. And I think you're right that we've seen some just such strong defensive teams that have had, you know, an NFL linebacker in them. And I think, you know, Arkansas could have that here. I agree with you that I don't think they're at the very top, but I do think these two guys are both really notable and are going to be fun. But I think, like I said, I don't know how much that can carry you when the other two, you know, everything around them is a little bit iffy.
We've also seen, and this was under a different defense, but we have seen years when Pittman was here and Odom was the defensive coordinator where the linebackers were used so much that at the end of the year they just were – I mean, in Bumper Pohl's case, he was broken at the end of the year. He couldn't play anymore. And so I wonder how much are they able to – like what's the depth like behind linebacker – to where, you know, do these two guys, do they play 95% of the snaps? Are they able to drop them down to 80% of the snaps? That'll be very interesting, I think, to watch this year.
I think Bradley Shaw helps you a lot with that. But I think behind those three, it's somewhat dubious. Just because, they got a couple of transfers in the spring, but they were kind of guys that were looking like depth guys, looking like special teams guys. Mm. They say they like them, but again, I don't expect them to hop on the mic and go, yeah, we don't really know why I brought this guy in. You're probably only going to see him on special teams. You know, they're not going to tell you that.
Yeah, stay healthy.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, that would be an issue if they lost one. But I do think Bradley Shaw helps with that. I'm not nearly as worried about depth there as I am at defensive line or secondary, honestly.
Okay, I want to ask you a couple of special teams. First off, Scott Starzik, I guess he is going to be the starting kicker. He's a freshman. You know, he's one of these. They lost the kicker who was from Mississippi, who I think he was like number one by one publication, and then they go and they get Starzik, who's like
number one by another.
Mm-hmm. And so obviously, you know, this is kind of like getting Cam Little again, or potentially could be like getting Cam Little again. But he's a freshman. What did you see from him?
Yeah, I think some more consistency than we saw from the kickers last season. I remember, you know, when Matthew Shipley came in, he was the transfer kicker they brought in, and it was pretty clear, okay, this is his job to lose. And then he kind of lost it. In the spring, he wasn't great. He wasn't very consistent. They brought in another transfer. They bring in Kyle Ramsey. I remember game one, we were really surprised to see Kyle Ramsey go out as the one kicker. We had thought it was going to be Shipley. And then you end up seeing Shipley as Ramsey got hurt. But neither guy was great last year in practices and what we got to see. The percentages were low. We saw some tough misses. The coaches said it's hard to kick inside this stadium. And they acknowledged, they were like, you know, it's hard to kick in the stadium, but, you know, Cam Little didn't really have a problem with it. So, like, obviously it's possible. But we saw
Cam Little just made a 70-yarder in the preseason, too.
And then
different kind of kicker.
Yeah. We saw some misses on the practice field, though, that were tough. Mm-hmm. With Starzyk, I feel like I didn't see as much of him as maybe I saw of the kickers last year, like literally getting to watch him. But I do think it was better. I think there were kind of some issues in the spring again. But I think that's maybe a little normal, especially for a freshman. They didn't go get another guy. It didn't seem like there was ever really a lot of doubt that it was going to be him. And I think he was able to show it more in fall camp. So I think they feel pretty good about him. The freshman of it all is a little tough, and they talked a lot in fall camp about wanting to try to simulate some pressure situations. Ultimately, the pressure you're putting a guy under on the practice field in August is not anywhere close to the same pressure that he is actually going to have. So how he does, we'll see. I'm interested. I don't know a lot about his personality. I don't know a lot about what kind of situations he's found himself in before. So I'll be very curious what they actually get from him the first time he has a real pressure kick.
And then you got Cam Shanks. He was an All-American last year at UAB. He's going to be a punt returner for the Razorbacks. Kind of interesting he's not on the kick return, but, you look for different on each of those two situations. But he was an All-American at UAB, and I've got two thoughts here. Number one is look at the competition he was playing against. I think that that's, is he able to do that if he's playing in the SEC? But on the other hand, he's probably got a lot better athletes around him at Arkansas, because, you're just the better teams seem to have – And when I say better teams, I'm saying, the power teams, they seem to have more athletes that they're able to put on special teams. And so I'm interested to see how that works out with him this year.
Yeah, and honestly, we haven't gotten to see much of him. He was limited and out some in practice. We didn't get to see him with the offense very much. Neither did the coaches because he wasn't able to participate all that much. And then we don't really get to watch a whole lot of return drills and things like that. And even when you do, it's drills. It's different than what you're actually going to see. So I have a lot of questions, not because I'm doubtful necessarily, but just because I haven't really seen him. And so right now all I have is the hype. And so I'm optimistic just because I think I would just be really surprised if a guy that had that level of success came here and was just a total flop and a non-factor. But I do think you're right about, the everybody around him, both coming at him and with him is going to be a better athlete. And so how is that going to work out? I'm so excited about the prospect of them actually having a real weapon and an exciting player in the return game because they haven't for a little while.
Yeah. When was the last time Arkansas had a punt return for a touchdown in an SEC game? I know they've had one against some FCS.
I was to say, are you quizzing me and you know the answer? Because either of us was going to know that, it would definitely be you.
I think it might have been over 20 years ago.
You really think
in
so?
An SEC game?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, Joe Adams.
Oh, yeah.
So it's been over a decade.
Yeah.
I forget about the Tennessee one. Yeah. Sydney's like, ask me what the heck are you doing? Most famous punt return in school history.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since they've had a game breaker at punt return.
Yeah, it's been forever. And then, like you said, they've got Rodney Hill at kick return. And I think he was for at least some of the year last year. Or was it Satanian both? I don't remember. And they didn't get a whole lot out of the return game on either side. So we'll see.
You get to this point, I remember things better 20 years ago than I remember 10 years ago or 15. It's the weirdest thing. I cannot explain it. And having kids has accelerated it in ways that I could never have imagined. So I am sorry, everyone, for missing Joe Adams.
I mean, I
Tennessee.
Did too. So it's not just you.
Yeah. So anyway, all right. Well, hey, we appreciate everybody being with us. We'll be back with another show tomorrow. We're going to have Colby Hale, Arkansas soccer coach, on the show tomorrow. Arkansas is going to be hosting Duke, the number one team in the country, later this week over at Razorback Field. So we'll be interested to talk to Colby about his team and that big matchup coming up here in Fayetteville. Hope that we see you at our website, wholehogsports.com, and hope we see you tomorrow on our podcast. Have a great day, everybody.